Blog Talk Radio. evening, everyone, and welcome to Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Hi, everybody. We've been having such beautiful weather here. It's hard to believe that February is almost gone. And a couple of years ago, in February, we were experiencing a terrible blizzard here. But hopefully we'll get through March and then April, then the spring will be here, and it'll be all good. I want to pass on this sad news. A little girl, 9 years old, Savannah Harding, was forced to run for 3 hours as punishment by her grandmother and her stepmother for lying about eating a piece of candy. You know, it's really sad that children are in the hands of people who abuse them, who are not caring for them and not loving them. It's heartbreaking for me, you know, because so many babies have been killed, abused. It's just really heartbreaking for me. So I just want to have a moment of silence for Savannah Harding. Okay, and her grandmother and her stepmother, you two women really need to be punished justly for that. And, you know, I say a lot of times it's a good thing that I'm not a judge, because some of the punishment that I would put on some of these people for the things they do to children, it'll make other people afraid to even think about doing something to children again. Because, you know, they give the abusers to children the least amount of punishment going. I mean, you can kill a child and get off with probation. You can kill a child and get away with it. Anthony Casey allegedly, you know, is responsible for her daughter's death. And where is she? Free as a bird. But I don't know. It's sad. And then on another note, Francisco Rivas, a guy here who worked for Papa John's Pizza, was out delivering flyers this evening, and someone came up and shot him in the back of the head, 19 years old. You know, so hopefully they'll get those people, the person who did that, and justice is served to them as well. With that being said, tonight's topic is prescription drugs more fatal than illegal drugs? And should the drug dealers and the doctors be held responsible for these people who are overdosing and dying from these drugs? Well, basically from the prescription drugs, because that's what's the trend now is prescription drugs, even though illegal drugs are still going on, but it's just the prescription drugs have just, like, taken over. So with that being said, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Rhea.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm getting better. Still a little bit congested.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Good. I'm glad you're better.
Thank you.
Couldn't pull up the big chat room, so I don't know what was going on. Blog Talk is tripping, but I do have the little flash one up. So do you have your big chat window open?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cause I couldn't open
for me.
Right, I couldn't open the one over here, so I'm just in the
little...
Yeah, I'm in the little teeny one. This one is so small. My goodness.
Oh.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's all good. Blog Talk be tripping sometimes, but that's on Blog Talk. So, you ready for tonight's topic, darling?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to jump right in on the prescription drugs. A lot of people are becoming prescription drug junkies, prescription drug addicts, you know, and it's all legal because they're prescribed these drugs, but they're abusing them to the point where it's causing them their lives. Gerald Levert, Amy Winehouser, Anna Nicole Smith, Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, you know, just to name a few that were on either pain medication, depressant, depressant drugs, or just, you know, painkillers or whatever, you know, and becoming addicted to them and eventually losing their lives over them, you know, because that's what happened to Anna Nicole Smith, Michael Jackson, Gerald Levert. You don't really hear that much of them speaking of Gerald Levert when he had overdosed, you know. But he had overdosed off of some type of antidepressant medication. And, you know, they're always saying it's an accident, accidental overdosing. But I think what, you know, it probably is, their intentions are not to take these medications and kill themselves. Their intentions are to take them in to get that feeling that it gives them, opposed to applying it to whatever's ailing them, as far as like painkillers that give you that, either that up high or that down high. That's what they're looking for. They're not even looking for the fact that it's giving them relief from their pain or their anxiety. So that's what causes them to become addicted, and then eventually they mix it with alcohol when they say don't do drugs and alcohol. But you have people who will drink and do drugs and do crazy things, like get in a car and drive and kill people or kill themselves, or you know, just drink and just go crazy. The latest I heard about Whitney Houston was that she had been on a drinking binge the night before. And her daughter, they claimed that her and her daughter was in a bar and they were drinking shots together. And you're supposed to be, I think they said you're supposed to be 21. So I'm wondering, now this is just something that, you know, came to my mind that had been really in the back of my mind. Were they actually, did they ever actually get high together? Because if she was drinking with her 18-year-old daughter and knowing that the legal age to drink is 21, what else were they doing together? You know, so that's something that had came to surface in my mind, and they're still concerned about Bobby Christina's welfare, you know, is what it's going to do to her, you know. But I know when people become stressed or emotional, they will tend to either do drugs or drink or do something to alleviate that pain, that depression, and, you know, things that they're going through, because I used to myself be a drug addict and a crackhead, you know. So I know that you can be pushed to that limit, especially if you have something that's really trying down on you. And I know the death of her mom is trying down on her. And then the fact of all these things that's going around, her picture being in the Enquirer. Did you see that, Rhea?
Yes, I did.
Rhea?
Yes, I saw it the first night they started speaking of it. And then the next day, a sister emailed it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me,
mm-hmm.
because money is being made off of her death in so many different ways. It's interesting because for years I have been hearing that she was very free with her monies, when, you know, it was all about fun, and those that was around her went along with that same ride or that same trip that she went along with. And
mm-hmm.
even in her death, they're still reaping the rewards off of who she was. And it's just
right.
sad. It's just sad because based on things that you're hearing and the way you're hearing them, more than likely that is the actual picture. And for that to be an actual picture, it had to be a family member.
But you know what? I'm thinking that it was somebody in the funeral home.
No,
because
I'm fine. Let me just say this. Okay. When you're being held accountable for something,
mm-hmm.
and when yours on the line, they guarded her from the time that she was delivered there
mm-hmm.
to when she was delivered to that church, because for one, they were honored to have her, But they had them sign confidentiality things and everything else. Because at first I said, well, maybe it was a maintenance person, maybe it was a this, that, and the other. Because I guess in my head, and that's just me, I can't see somebody putting their business on the line, because if they turn around and sue them, okay, they could take that business under with that one lawsuit. So I guess, I don't know, because the first thought I said was it was for somebody from the federal home, but I didn't know about the confidentiality statements that they signed and things such as that. I didn't know about the guards and the security that they had there and things such as that. So who knows? But it just, it said that their wishes were not honored. But on the other hand, a whole bunch of people wanted to see that anyway. So, I mean, the inquirer wouldn't be able to, excuse me, still be doing the things it's doing if it didn't have a following. You know, so who knows? But she looked good.
Yes, she did.
She really looked at peace.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she definitely was at peace, you know, because, you know, but... What, and then this, here's the thing. I had also, you know, you're just hearing different things day in and day out. Then we're going to get off the subject of Whitney Houston. But you're hearing things day in and day out that Bobby Brown was given tickets to come to the funeral. He brought his family. And then it said that they kept asking him to move. They wanted him to sit with Whitney's family. Then he wanted his kids to sit with them, because you have to look at the fact when Whitney and Bobby was married, those kids became her children too. So then it said that he was asked not to approach Bobby Christina. My thing is, that's his daughter. And they're saying if she didn't approach him, then he wasn't to approach her. But I'm thinking also that it may be something where Whitney may have turned her against Bobby, or maybe the family turned her against Bobby or something like that, because now all she has is a father. So why wouldn't she want to be close to her father? You know, not unless, like, I'm thinking that her mind has been poisoned towards him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he still loves her, because if he didn't, he wouldn't have went to approach her, and he wouldn't have went to his ex-wife's funeral. You know, and then Bobby went through some changes as well. He lost his father and Whitney, and possibly his daughter. So, you know, nothing's being said about, you know, his feelings and, you know, what he's going through, you know, even though everybody portrayed him as a bad boy, this, and he was doing this, and he was doing that. The things that he was doing, if Whitney accepted them, then that's all that mattered, because nobody else was married to that man but her. She was the only one that went through the abuse but her. She's the only one that knows how good he was making love to her. Whatever he did to her, she accepted. So
exactly.
Why everybody else is all upset and mad at Bobby, I can't understand, because it wasn't about Bobby. It wasn't about her, Bobby, and everybody. It was about her and Bobby. Even if her mother, you know, if her mother was upset, then that was something that she should have kept to herself. You don't take things out on a person because of how you personally feel. You have to understand how that person feels, you know, because it was Whitney. Whitney was the one that wanted to be with him. And from my understanding, Whitney was the one who was the first one who was on drugs, you know.
Well,
that was
I think she was actually using drugs before she got with him.
Right,
and
that's what I'm saying.
People are not, it's like they, you know, people are blaming him for doing this, that, and the other. But the bottom line is, they act like Whitney didn't have a man at home. Whitney manipulated and controlled all those people around her. And she did it with her money in a lot of ways. So Whitney lived her life the way the hell she wanted to. So they really need to kind of back off. And Whitney wasn't no weakling that didn't know, you know, she lived exactly how she wanted to. And
partying.
I think a lot of that, and I hate the way this is going to sound, but the fact of the matter is, I think a lot of that is a residual effect of the way that she was brought up. When you bring these, when you come up in such a strict environment, and you get a taste of that freedom, a lot of them go buck wild and they never return from it. There, when I was in school growing up, there were two sisters. They grew up as Jehovah's Witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And it always disturbed me that if you want to, the way Jehovah's Witnesses practice, they need to have their own schools. They need to have their own, because you got these kids in these regular schools where we have parties and where we do Christmas grab bags and stuff like that, and they can't participate in none of this. Baby, those girls was one year apart. The first one turned 18 and went all willy-nilly. The second one turned 18 and walked on the stroll and been doing it ever since. It's like they went wow. And, I mean, really, really, you know, it's like, dang, you never would have thought that of them. And I sit back and I look at that, and you look at that tight upbringing and things such as that, and it just makes you wonder when she got from under that rain, she just, you know, it's like you get that first taste of freedom, and freedom is the first thing that comes to your mind, and then the next thing, you know, they're constantly saying fun. She lived her life the way she wanted to, and they need to quit trying to blame that man for what that woman did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she wasn't no innocent and all that. He didn't, you know, she did what she wanted to do. She just
mm-hmm.
thought she could control it. But anybody that has been around anybody who's used it, has paid any attention to it, had enough knowledge to know you can't control drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get a hold of you, they become the master.
Yep, because I can contest to that. You know, it's not like you can say, because some people start off saying, well, I'm just a weekend warrior, you know, doing it on the weekend. Next thing you know, you sneak another day in, and then another day, then you be doing it 7 days a week.
Exactly.
All day long, it becomes a part of your life. And people who consider themselves being, I do it because of this. No, you do it because that's what you want to do.
Exactly.
No excuse, no other reason. You do it because that's what you want to do. And if you are doing crack, you're a crackhead, you're a junkie, you're all those things that entwine you to be as far as you're being a drug addict.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you got some people saying, because one young lady had told me that she did crack, but she wasn't a crackhead. Okay, I did crack, and I was a crackhead. But, you know, what was the difference? She said, well, I went to work too every day. But that
mm-hmm.
didn't make me not be a crackhead because I had a job and I worked. You got crackheads that are politicians. You got crackheads that are you know, high officials. You got crackheads that have good positions. You got crackhead doctors, crackhead nurses. And, you know, just because they have these jobs and they're doing this and doing that, that does not negate the fact that they are still crackheads. You know,
exactly.
And how can you say because you have a job and you do crack, you're not a crackhead, you're just addicted to cocaine? Okay, well, you can dress it up any way you want. You're still a crackhead. You know, and it took me a while within my addiction before I had accept being the fact that I was addicted, because that's how addicts are. You're in denial. You don't want to be associated with being the fact that somebody telling you you're addicted to this or you're a crackhead or you're a junkie. You don't want to hear those things because you think that you have it under control. You think, okay, I'm going to stop next week. But it doesn't happen like that. So it took me a while, like I said, to even admit to myself that I was a drug addict. Not me. I ain't no drug addict. That's what I kept telling myself until eventually I just had to admit to myself, hey, this stuff got a hold on me. And I've done every drug in the world except for methamphetamine and ecstasy. Those are the only drugs I have not done. But one thing for certain, two things off is sure, I've been drug-free for, it's getting close to 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I can and will say is that I will never, ever go back to using drugs again. You know how people say never? Well, I'm saying never because I will never go back to using drugs again. Number one, the first reason is because I believe the moment that I use, it's going to kill me. I'm not ready to die. And the second reason is because the drugs are not like they used to be. You know, you got any and everything out here. You're getting in these drugs. So
I know I was talking to somebody about marijuana. And because I don't use and have never used, they didn't, you know, think I knew too much. Well, first of all, I was with somebody who was a smoker, a weed smoker. So I knew about, you know, knew of it. Let's put it like that. But anyway, I told them, I said, you know, the way that stuff smells nowadays will scare the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming from somebody who, basically, I'm a 70s child. Mm-hmm. And that stuff stinks so bad today that it's like, oh, my God, what the heck is on that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, wow. Because I remember it from back then, and it's like the stuff they doing now is so harsh and so this, that, and the other, and it's like, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Me personally, even if I had the – well, first of all, I can't stand the smell of it. That stuff stinks so bad. That smell would run me away, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I just sit back and I just look at it in general. You have so many people doing so many things to drugs, whether they're illegal or legal. Just like that company that was busted recently, that manufacturing the fake Viagra pills, and they were using the inkjet cartridges to make it blue. They named the three things they were using to make these pills, because they were passing off as Viagra. And it's like,
wow.
You're going to kill these people.
And that's considered a prescription drug. And people who go on the internet, order these drugs off of the internet, you don't know what you're getting.
Exactly.
You know, so you want to order Viagra and all that kind of stuff and all that stuff, get them your system and kill you worse than the regular prescription drugs, because the prescription drugs, basically, there's so many chemicals in them that it causes your body to wreak havoc on itself, because things that our bodies were not meant for chemicals, number one. Because if you're taking something, okay, let's just say Viagra was used really for high blood pressure, and they discovered that it causes the blood to rush and flow in your body, so now they use it as an enhancement. But
oh, wow.
Yeah, but the causes they have, you can have a hard-on for 4 hours and causing heart attacks. What else does it cause? Heart attacks, stroke, this, that, and all this and that. But people are taking it just to get, you know, for men to have an erection. You know,
exactly.
There are natural things that you can do to get an erection, you know, besides taking something that's going to cause your death or cause you to have a stroke, to go blind, or, you know, whatever else it does. You know, and then they have all these different prescription pills, and they be saying it's so nice. If you're suffering from incontinence, you take this pill, and it may cause headache, diarrhea, stomach pain, vomiting, loose bowels, this and that. But it'll keep you from peeing on yourself. I would rather pee on myself all day long than to go through the withdrawals, the side effects for some of these drugs that they're prescribing for these people.
But even with Viagra, when Viagra is used now more so to maintain that hard on than to get that hard on, they want to go to these noble times. You have men that are in their 30s using that so that they can have longevity and whatnot like that. Then they wonder why after 2 or 3 years they can't function at all, because guess what? Your body wasn't built like that.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
It became addicted, and it became addicted for the Viagra, became immune to it. So it wanted the Viagra to keep it going. And see,
that's,
you know, when you do something to your body that really is not necessary for it, then that's the cause for it. You know, and people don't realize that. But, you know, and this prescription drug thing is getting out of hand. These doctors are actually not even examining patients, you know, writing them prescriptions, and
well,
the patients are paying
them
money.
Because I feel as though they should be held accountable. Because if they didn't write that prescription, now, yes, they going to sell that stuff, sell it on the street and this, that, and the other. I know in this city, a Vicodin goes for $20 a pop. So, yes, people do sell them and this, that, and the other. But the way those doctors are writing those prescriptions, they do need to be held accountable because they are breaking the Hippocratic oath from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And that's to do no
yeah,
harm.
But, yeah, but, you know, money talks, so that's what
yeah.
it's all about. It's about that almighty
it's
dollar.
It.
And
it's
they
it.
Will write prescriptions. We've had within the last, I would say the last couple of years, a lot of doctors getting busted here for writing prescriptions for drug addicts and writing prescriptions for people who are getting the pills and selling them, and they know that they are selling them, you know, selling, what's that, Vicodins for $25
mm-hmm.
and the other one, what's the other one, oxycodone, selling them for $50 a piece and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But I think, yeah, doctors, not only should they be held accountable, but they should be, their license should be taken away from them and they should never be able to practice again. Now, some doctors, they can lose their license in certain states and they can be
mm-hmm.
reinstated in different states. They'll go somewhere else and set
wow.
up practice somewhere else. You know, that happens too. But, you know, they should not be able to practice again because they're not going to do nothing but the same thing over and over again because once they get used to getting that money, that quick, fast money like that, that is what they're going to do because that's their addiction.
Wow.
Which you know,
is just like, what's the difference between them and a drug dealer?
Well, the difference between them is that they don't have to really worry about the police coming and, you know, busting them on the street or busting them. You know,
mm-hmm.
not unless this is a doctor's office that is known, like I said, a few of the doctor's office was, you know, busted up here because I guess they sent some undercover policemen in or whatever. But, you know, if you look at Shady and stuff like that, then that calls for the police to do an investigation on you. But a drug dealer, you know, standing on the corner selling drugs, you know, and illegal drugs.
Just like,
you know,
you played Freddy's Dead, that's the pusher man. Call it whatever
mm-hmm.
you want to say it, call it. But it ain't no different between them, but they may have on a suit, than those other ones. And it ain't even that this is legal in this thing. Because what they doing is really not legal. Well, after Conrad Murray, they'll start cracking down on it.
Right, right,
they'll
right.
start cracking down on it.
Right, because, I mean, and this has been going on forever, too. This has definitely
oh, yeah.
been going on forever because there are even some doctors that are drug addicts, and they have liquid cocaine in the hospitals where they have it, you know, under lock and key, and then it gets missing. And you can't, the people that are, whoever the doctor is the one who is charged with that, or whoever has keys to those cabinets are the ones that are charged with these missing drugs. But, you know, like you said, there is no difference. If a doctor is going to be pushing the drugs like a drug addict, like a drug dealer is pushing his drugs, then there is no difference. You know, you got doctors that are honest doctors and doctors that will say to their patients, well, you know, I really don't want to give you this. I think you had enough. Or they'll prescribe just what is supposed to be prescribed to you. You know, because anytime you can walk into a doctor's office and say to him, I want some pain pillars, some painkillers, and you tell him what you want and he gives them to you without no examination, then that doctor needs to be checked.
Yeah.
You know.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so, and just like they're trying to, like Anna Nicole Smith, when she overdosed, I think that not only should the doctors be responsible, but also that lawyer that was what was his name?
The dark hair one. Yeah.
Yeah. He should be held accountable too because he knew what she was doing and he was even getting those drugs for her.
He provided her with some of the doctors that gave it to her.
Mm-hmm. And then she lost her son, you know, right before that. you know, but it's a sad thing because when you see something happening to somebody else, and then I guess, you know, being in the type of mind a drug addict is in, because this is how I'm going to tell you how they think. Okay, back in the day when I used to get high off of heroin, they used to have it like different names. Like they would have murder one, homicide, killer, and all those different names, right? So if somebody got a hold of some good, now this is how crazy the drugs have you thinking. They get a hold of some good drug and somebody ODs, everybody want the drug that that person had because they know it was good. Where they get it from? They had some murder one. You would go clean across town to get that drug. This is how drug addicts' mind runs. Instead of your thinking, a normal person would think like, "Wow, why would somebody want to get hold of something that kills somebody or cause somebody to overdose?" That's a normal person's thought. But if you're a drug addict, and, you know, all you think about is getting high, that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be chasing that murder one, the homicide, killer, and all that kind of stuff so you can have that same high that that person had before they OD'd.
Wow.
Yes, because I OD'd 3 times. The last time I OD'd, I was taken to the hospital and I was DOA. But did that stop me? Nope. Nope, it did not stop me. I think what has stopped me was I had just one day just stopped. Then I went from that drug to, I think I started, then I started smoking reefer, from reefer to angel dust, from angel dust to acid, from acid to hashies, just, you know, the whole gamut. And then I finally, you know, got on crack. Crack was the most addictive drug that I have ever been on in my life. And I will tell anybody that if they can kick a crack habit, my hat goes off to them. Because it is really an addictive drug. And I know, because I was a crackhead. So if anybody's out there and they say, "Well, I wasn't addicted to it. I just smoked it on the weekend. I just no. You're not going to tell me that, because I know too many people who started off like that, being those weekend warriors, and next thing I know, they was doing it every day.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and, you know, drugs are not good for our system, you know, at all. But they're trying to make it so that marijuana is legal, because marijuana was put on earth for medicinal purposes. But because man decided that he wanted to use it for other things, it was taken out of content. And, you know, so they're just trying to say it's an illegal drug. But I've never heard of anybody dying from smoking marijuana or overdosing from smoking marijuana.
They say it's a gateway.
That's
a gateway. They call that a gateway drug.
Right, makes you want to do other things. Well, that could be with anything, because, and then it depends on your environment, you know, the people you hang out with and stuff like that, because people, how I basically started to even getting high was I used to work in this nightclub, and bands used to come through there. And, you know, when I was coming out, even my girlfriends around me, they used to smoke reefer. And they used to get to laughing, acting crazy, and I couldn't believe that. I said, "What is so funny?" I could not believe that they were smoking that stuff and acting. And it used to piss me off, you know, how they was acting. But not until I actually smoked my very first joint, and I did it while I was at work. Oh, my goodness. I got to laughing. I dropped a tray of drinks. I couldn't stop laughing. They was threatening to send me home. It was just, oh. So I understand. I understand, you know.
No, the thought of that is hilarious to me.
Well, we have a call. I think this is Miss Kane. Let me bring her in. Hello, 334.
That time, Granny was getting tight.
What's happening?
How y'all doing tonight?
Just
okay,
fine. How are
girlfriend?
You? I fell asleep on you last night.
On who?
Well, it's your last night.
Yeah, by substance abuse.
Because I know I RSVP'd for it.
Uh-huh.
I woke up at 1:30. I'm like, oh, Lord, I'm late. I thought I had just taken a nap.
Well, honey, just catch the archives. Just catch the archives.
I will.
That's all I can take. I'm over here. Ooh, I don't know what I'm doing. Trying to put a fan together. My name is not Martha Stewart.
Okay, why are you putting the fan together in February?
Because I can't sleep without it. I have to have one, you know what I'm saying,
oh.
When I lay down at night or whatnot. But, and then the motor went out on the other one.
And then you get under the covers, don't you?
Yep. Ain't that about
it? I love it.
But I be feeling like I can't breathe, and then I be needing, you know what I'm saying, like, I need air. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And I can't just sleep in silence either. I can't stand that. But even though I hear, like, my AC unit or my heater unit or whatever, because, you know, the central air heater, whatever, I hear it, but it's not enough. I need, like, a pleasant sound to just kind of put me on over the edge. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, that's right, because I can't take that heat neither. But do you have anything to add to this conversation that we're having, Miss Kane?
Oh, it got to be so funny. But listen, I do think that prescription drugs are more dangerous than street drugs because, number one, I went to the dentist, and I had to have a filling. And so, you know, at first when he went in, I was all right. Okay. I had like a little mild sensitive kind of pain after the procedure and stuff was done. I get home, I'm in agony. Oh, God. I'm feeling like I'm about to fall out. It's hurting. I can't take it. You know, hey, look, we got to do something. Normally, he'll give me Lortabs.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, I used to not take Lortabs because they made my chest hurt. So they called me in a prescription at the pharmacy, and I went picked it up. Not paying attention, I looked on it. It's hydrocodone, so I ain't thinking nothing about it. Girl, when I popped one of them pills, I was all right because I was in a lot of pain. But, like, maybe 2 days later when the pain was just mild, I said, okay, I'm going to take one or whatever. Who? Oh, my God, have mercy. I felt like I was on cloud 200, and I see how people get addicted to them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you take about two or three of them, you finna die. I'm telling you, I don't know what kind of feeling. It's a good feeling, and it's a bad feeling all in one. But I'm telling you, it's no joke. And then they got another medicine that they give people for like I had a bronchitis infection like 2 years ago, and they gave me some amoxicillin. It like to kill me. And some people take it. They love that type of stuff, and it's an antibiotic. And a lot of folks know when they, I got a pain or I got an infection, I'ma just call up my homie right in the corner and go get some from him. You can't do that mess. That's why they always tell you do not share your medication with nobody else. Now, they claim that the amoxicillin is part of the family of penicillin and all of that crap. No, I don't know what's in that stuff, but it is dangerous. I had 5 allergic reactions to it, including a blood vessel getting eruption in my eye. And then on top of that, it triggered on migraines. And then I felt like I could go sit out in somebody's pasture and eat a cow or a hog, just like that.
Mm.
I ain't never in my life felt like that. I was so weak. I said, oh, my God. But I see a lot of people, you know what I'm saying, that get addicted to, like, different type of prescription drugs. My aunt used to work with this white girl, and she didn't care what you had. You could have a Tylenol, she'll be trying to buy it from you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. You know, because I used to, well, at one point, this was after my mom had died, I was going to a psychiatrist because I was just crazy out of my mind, but they had prescribed me on some type, I forgot what, I don't know if it was Zoloft or one of those antidepressant medications.
Mm-hmm.
I took it two times. The first time I took it, it just seemed like my head had became light, seemed like I wasn't thinking right, you know, just seemed like half my brain was wiped out. So I said, well, okay, maybe that's just because the first time I took it. The second time I took it, I said, oh, no, I can't deal with this. And I can't see, I mean, if that's what a person wants to get into and wants to think that's going to solve their problems. But to me, all it did was it was a temporary fix, because once the medication wore off, I was right back being depressed, you know. So I couldn't deal with it. I can't deal with, you know, taking those medications. And then when I was in a car accident, they prescribed, what's that first one they prescribed? Wasn't Vicodin, they eventually described Vicodin, but the other one, Percocet. Lord have mercy, I was in the hospital, they gave me a Percocet, and I swear I thought I was talking to somebody, but it wasn't nobody in that room but me. And I could have sworn that I was talking to somebody because I could hear myself talking. That medicine had caused me to hallucinate. And I told him I did not want it. Do you know that fool sent me home with a prescription of Percocet? And I called him back and I said, I told you I didn't want these Percocets. You know what this dodo told me? Well, you're going to have to come back in for an examination. Come back in for an examination. I just left the hospital. You know what I was in there for. You need to change this prescription.
Exactly.
It took them about 3 days. Okay?
Oh.
I said, I couldn't. And then when I did, I forgot what they had given me. But I only took two of them because for some reason when medicine gets in my body, it just doesn't. I don't know, it don't feel right. My head gets the feeling light and just, I have all these crazy feelings in my body when I take medication, prescribed medication. Now, I can take Advil or, what's the other one? Advil, Aleve, you know, stuff like that, but all that Percocet, Vicodin, this, that, Oxycontin, this and that. Oh, no. No, my body's not for that. But, you know, people, because I have a family member, she's been on medication for years, and I know that. And she's still depressed. She's still depressed. And I think that's what's causing her health to decline is basically all the medication that she's on. She's been on Valium forever. She's been on depressant, antidepressant medication, hormone replacement, diabetes, high blood pressure, all these different medications that she's taking every day. And it's just sad to me because I just don't think that a person who doesn't need those medications should be taking them. And a doctor will prescribe medication to you before he even gets to the root of the problem. That's why I really don't like to even deal with these commercial doctors. I'd rather go to holistic doctors, even though they cost more naturally because they don't have the insurance plans like the regular doctors do. And that's because they don't want them to do their business. And I used to suffer from yeast infections. Seemed like I would have a yeast infection every month. I went to a holistic doctor, and he did a consultation, gave me the herbs and, you know, stuff like that to take. I have not had a yeast infection since. But all the time when I'm going and getting those, what are those pills they give you? They give you a little pill when you go to the regular doctor to take.
Diflucan.
What is it?
Diflucan or something.
Diflucan. They give you that, and that clears it up, but it comes back. The holistic doctor went to the root of it and got rid of what was causing the problem from the beginning, whatever that was, you know. So I took, you know, took the herbs that he gave me, and that was it. But I'm going to tell you, that cost me about $200-some for the consultation and the cost of the herbs that he gave me, which really is worth it because going back and forth to the doctor, like I said, I was getting like maybe once a month or something like that, and you add that up over a few years' time. But, you know, that's what I do. When I can't afford it, I go see a holistic doctor because they work solely with the herbs, the things that your body, you don't have any side effects. You don't have to worry about, you know, getting a headache and upset stomach and diarrhea and choking and, you know, all the things that those chemicals do to your body. But, you know, that's just how I am now. I know that some people have to, you know, they take those the medications that the doctors prescribe for them solely because that's what they feel is helping them. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, because at times I go to the doctor too to get a quick fix. You know, if I have, because one time my feet wasn't right. Going to them Koreans doing my feet, I had developed athletic feet. And I went to this doctor, and he gave me these pills to take, but I didn't take all them pills because on it it said, and I always read the instructions where for the side effects. The side effects could be after you take them for, I think, a week. Anytime after a week, there's possibility that it can affect your kidneys. I said, okay. So I took them for a week. I had 30 of them pills to take. I took a week's worth, and that was it. My feet had cleared up after that week anyway, so why was I taking the rest of them? You know, so they over-medicate you, I think, at times. Because my feet had cleared up in a week, but he gave me 30 tablets to take once a day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, and my athletic feet, they haven't came back, so I guess it was because me being, you know, because those Koreans, they're not too clean with what they do. But, you know, getting back to the prescription drugs things, Drolivert, he was taking an antidepressant and something else he took when he had OD'd. But like I said, you really didn't hear that much when he had died, you know, opposed to Whitney and Michael Jackson. And speaking back on this, the matter of them showing Whitney in the casket, I don't really think that was as bad as them showing Michael Jackson in the coroner's office on a table, looking like that was a horrible thing for whoever did that.
I didn't see that.
And trust
one.
And believe, that was somebody that was who worked in the morgue, because I know didn't nobody just walk up in that morgue and take that picture, you know. So I think that was just a horrible thing for somebody to do, you know, once he was dead. And they even had Tupac's autopsy picture on the internet, you know. But people do anything for the almighty dollar. You know, just anything. And I don't know, maybe if I was working in a funeral home and somebody famous came through there, I don't know, I may have done the same thing. I mean, sirs, you got to look at it, because if you somewhere and someone, you got a chance to get your hands on some money, because they may have sold that picture for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
I'm quite sure they probably did. You know, it gives you something to think about, especially if nobody can point the finger at you and they ain't going to tell that you did it.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, though, but, you know, it's just terrible how these drugs are taking people out. And the illegal drugs, I don't know if you guys know who Jimi Hendrix was, but he was into heroin and he overdosed on heroin, just like Janis Joplin. And I know you all know Billie Holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she went out on heroin as well. So you got your illegal drugs and you got your prescription drugs, and it's really terrible when it comes to the point where they're actually killing you, prescription and illegal. But lately it's been the prescription drugs that have been, you know, more so in the media, because you're not really hearing or read about anybody who's overdosed off of heroin. Not to say that they're not, because they definitely are, or, you know, going to seizure from smoking crack or whatever. But it's just these prescription drugs are so prevalent, and, you know, everybody's using them. You know, so you have to be very, very careful. We're going to take a musical break, and we'll be right back.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Can't stop it in black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I dream got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab.
Sorry, I had the mute button on in here jamming. That's that's Amy Winehouse. Winehouse. What was that to say? Rehab. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. I put my mute button on when I want to jam. Okay, so we're talking tonight about prescription drugs, are they more fatal than illegal drugs? And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. The number again is 646-652-2877. Okay, so we're going to get on with the illegal drugs. And what do you think the worst illegal drug out there is, Ms. Kane or Rhea? Do you know? Rhea, you may not know.
Isn't it methamphetamine?
Yes, ma'am. You know, girl.
I was going to say that, too.
Well, see, I didn't know because you never, you know, some people don't know these things, darling, and I didn't want to, you know, put you out to anything like that.
Let me tell you something. You can. I saw somebody. I know somebody who started using that.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, it wasn't 2 weeks. That girl looked like the Walking Dead.
Yeah, meth is worse.
Oh my! Her teeth, her skin, her face, and she must not have had nothing to eat in those 2 weeks. I was like, wow. I mean, and it was just so quick to me. And this is a woman. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
She ended up losing her job. I'm like,
Yeah, meth is worse than cocaine, than crack. Meth is worse than smoking crack cocaine. And see, that's something that I never, ever even tried in my life, and glad that I didn't, because getting hooked on that will take you down so fast until you won't know what happened. You know, I've seen the programs on the NGO channel, and, you know, they have these different documentaries on about methamphetamine, how when they go and bust those labs up, how if you don't, when the police and stuff were busting them up, the films and stuff was causing some of the policemen, after a while, they was discovering that they had developed cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they was wondering, you know, what had happened. And so that's why now they have to get dressed up in these suits and these protective gear and all this kind of, and mask and all this kind of stuff. And can you imagine these people having meth labs in their home and have little babies and children running around in that mess?
They
do that all the time down here where I stay.
In one of the suburbs of Chicago, meth labs were so popular for being in those homes. And then, you know, like they were raided, right? And, you know, bust it and get rid of the equipment. But they said that stuff gets into the walls.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And people were moving their families in those homes. And those children were getting sick almost. And they never knew what the cause of it was.
Yeah. And see, the real estates, they know these things, but they don't tell potential buyers that this used to be a home where meth was manufactured.
And so they publicized it here. And because of so many babies getting sick, you know, and stuff like that. So as long as you ask, they had to disclose it. But if you didn't ask, they didn't disclose it. And so that became a common question that people started asking around Chicago.
Wow. And then sometimes when you go up, sometimes you're not careful when they be manufacturing that stuff, it can explode.
Yeah.
Because one of those documentaries I saw where this guy had, the lab had exploded, he was burnt up. He was burnt up. He almost died. But, you know, that stuff is very dangerous. Very dangerous, and they was getting like the what was it? What kind of pills were they? The amphetamine, some type of pill that they was getting that they had to. They were selling them like you could get them over the counter, or you could just go. It's on the tip of my tongue too.
And or something like that, because they was one of the over the counter medications they had in there, and our Walgreens, they had to remove them all and they put them under lock and key because they were coming in there snatching them and running them, and they said people use them to make meth.
Yeah. Mhm. All kinds of stuff.
That's the word I think.
Yeah. If you go on the internet, you can pull up the ingredients, but you know it's Yeah. You know, and that's what a lot of these people are doing, because it's a quick, you can make a lot of money off of meth. A lot of money, because that's what the kids are in. Huh?
They say it's highly addictive.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, because on one of those documents, the person said, well, I smoked it one time, and I think they had been on it for about maybe 10 years, but looking at the pictures, how this person had transformed from the very first time they started smoking up to the time when they were showing this documentary, it was, oh, my God, the teeth was all, oh, my, his mouth, they call it meth mouth. It was just, oh, my goodness, how could somebody just do that to themselves? But that's what the drug tells you to do. That's what it tells you to do.
You lose your teeth.
And your skin, you know, bugs are crawling on you. They be picking their skin, have all these abscess and things all over their face. They just, it's like I said, it's worse than crack cocaine. And I've noticed that some, because it basically was, a Caucasian drug. You know, you didn't really hear about blacks that much using meth, but now I'm hearing that, you know, some there are blacks that are using meth as well. But more power to them, because that's one drug I am just so glad that I did not get involved with. I really am. And another drug was ecstasy. I heard, now I really don't know that much about ecstasy, but I understand it's a pill that you take, and it causes cause you to be more sexually aroused, and it causes you to
I say it causes you to act a fool.
Well, see, I really don't know, but I do know, I did hear that, because I knew of someone who had tried it, quote unquote, and they said how they felt. It just makes you feel like you want to just have sex all night, and you know, you just want somebody to touch you, and you know, that's how you feel. And I said, well, all right.
My cousin told me, she was like, man, cuz, she's so stupid. She said, she had popped the pill. They call it beams and stuff. Time I popped the beam off of the club. She talking about something, I felt like I could run around the whole club about 30 times.
No.
Girl, that girl had me on the floor. I said, you need to just go stand in the corner somewhere. You is fired, because she crazy. Talking about, it took me about 2 days for to calm down off of that pill. Talking about, so her and her home girl had popped one and said they had left and went home and said they were laying in the bed. I guess they, you know, like how slumber party things, that's what they do, little young things or whatever, 19, 20. Said her home girl said, she asked her home girl, you sleep? She said, mm-mm. She said, you want to get up and clean up? She said, mm-hmm. She said, clean that whole house up. I said, she talking about, I just couldn't calm down. She said, I was so hot. She said, I don't know what to do. I said, well, that'll let you know next time. You better leave that crap alone. I ain't never tried one of them. I ain't never really been interested in trying to try no beam. I don't need nothing to take me up out my element. I'm already crazy.
Mm-hmm. Because like I said, I'm just so glad that I never tried, you know, those two drugs, the ecstasy and meth. I know that when I was doing cocaine, I had stayed up one time a whole week, did not sleep, did not eat, because, you know, it takes your appetite away as well. And I was still going to work every day. One day I had went to work, and when you crash, you crash. So we get like maybe in the morning we would get a half hour break before our lunch break, like from maybe 8 to 8:30. So we had bathrooms that had like lounges in them. So I went in the bathroom and laid down. Next thing I know, it was 10:30. I woke up, my supervisor was looking me in my face, and she said, I'm not going to say anything about this. She said, but if it ever happens again, you are going to be suspended. I assured her that it would never happen again. Maybe about 2 or 3 weeks later, I go into the bathroom with this girl. She was cleaning the bathroom, so I sat down in one of the chairs, called myself talking to her. The next thing I know, I was asleep. Supervisor standing in my face when I opened my eyes. She said, come to the office. I got suspended for 3 days. But you know what? That was really good because I got a chance, even though I still, when I got off, went home, got high, whatever, I got a chance to sleep. Another time I was at work and I was standing up, sleep. And I could hear the people around me talking. And I heard one girl say, she's asleep. You know, I wasn't in a deep sleep, but you know how you just get ready to go off into a sleep. And I could not open my eyes. I couldn't say nothing. But somehow or another, I came to. But, you know, like when that's how that crack would do. You would keep you up for days. You wouldn't eat, wouldn't sleep. And remember when Richard Pryor said that pipe was talking to him? That's the truth. That pipe talks to you.
Have mercy.
It sure talked to me. Because I'm going to tell you, when I get my kids, I'm getting them ready for school, get them off to school, that pipe be saying, come and get me. Come on. It's our time. I swear, that pipe was talking to me. Say, come on, it's our time. Get me out this drawer. Come on. So I go in there and get it out. Cook up my cocaine, my crack, get to smoking, smoke all day. Have my little friends come over, my girlfriends. We'd be just having a little crack thing all day till the kids get out of school. Couldn't wait for them to go to bed. Then either go over to my girlfriend's house or they come over to my house, kids in the bed. But, you know, that's just how that crack had me in its clutches. I went to rehab, went to jail. I mean, it was like, and even after going to rehab, I went to rehab, was in there for 30 days, came out, stayed away for a minute. But it tells you in the when you're going through the program, you take 12 steps. And one of those steps is to stay away from the people, places, and things that are involved with drugs. So I said, I can go around them because I ain't going to do no drugs. I'm all right. No, I was not because I got right back on them. Went to jail, got out of jail, thought the same thing, got right back on, was on probation. And what had really caused me to stop using the drugs was because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I got sick and tired of being beat out of my money. I got sick and tired of my probation officer threatening me. He had threatened me so bad until I said, this has got to be it. I can't keep doing this. Because I was on my way back to jail to do those backup years that I had after I had gotten out of jail. And let me tell you why I had went to jail in the first place, because I was selling cocaine and I was my best customer. So,
wow.
You know, after all that, I got clean and stopped smoking cigarettes and, you know, just went through a whole transformation. And like I said, it's coming up on 30 years that I've been drug-free. And I can tell anybody, it's not easy. It's not like you're going to wake up one day and you're going to stop, because it's not like that. But you can. If that's what you want to do, it has to be in your heart, and you really have to involve God. This is when you and God have that private conversation, that conversation where you tell him to help me, I'm done with it. You know, he sees in your heart that it's in your heart, then that's when you can come off of it. But if it's not in your heart, you're not going to come off of it, because I prayed so many times. But guess what? Right after them prayers, that pipe would say, come on, come here, come here, come and get a hit. You need a hit. You'll feel better. That's what I did. So once it got into my heart that this was the end, I did not want it anymore, God, please help me, that's what happened. And anybody who is going through any type of an addiction, be it cigarette, be it coffee, whatever your addiction is, you need to involve God. Because man can't really help you. You know, they put you in rehab and do this and do that, and you see what rehab do. Sometimes going to those meetings was only intensifying the fact of me wanting to get high. You know, hearing somebody talking about, yeah, we had the best crack, we had the best this, blah, 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 yeah. This is how the addiction had me. I went to see my probation officer with a crack rock in my bra. And I'm sitting up there, he just talking, and all I'm saying to myself is, I wish he would hurry up so I can go home and get high. You know, but that's just how that addiction will get you. But like I said, if you're trying to overcome an addiction, true, you can't do it by yourself. And some people do go through those programs and they, you know, get cleaned or whatever, but it just wasn't for me. You know, it wasn't for me. Everybody has their little hitch or their little niche or how they carry things out. It wasn't for me because, number one, you go up in there, they smoking, drinking coffee, cursing, and all this and that. And, you know, I had no control over what was going on in the meetings. All I could do was go there and say, hey, my name is Gail. I'm an addict. Hi, Gail. You know, and tell them my little story or whatever. But, you know, it just wasn't the place that I wanted to be. So it didn't work for me, but I know of some other people who went through those programs, and they're doing just fine. You know, that was how they did it.
It definitely has to be the choice of the person, though. Just like it definitely has to be the choice of the person. Just
right.
Like sometimes they sit up and they'll say, well, they family could have did more, or they family could have did this, or they family could have did that. No, they couldn't have, because if that person really didn't want to do that when they got right back out, they're going to go right back doing what they were doing in the first place.
Right, and you can't, your family, it has to be about you, because you can't do it for your mother, you can't do it for your father, your sister, your brother, your children. It has to be about you, because when you're doing it for them and you come back out, you haven't really done anything. You
exactly.
Just satisfied them. You know, just like I'd be watching Intervention, everybody sitting around in a circle, they crying and begging and pleading with this person to go to rehab, and you go to rehab, we love you. Of course you love them, but you also become an enabler for them. You know, you're begging and pleading for them to go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with suggesting to a family member, especially someone that you love, if it's your mother, your sister, your brother, you know, why don't you go into rehab? You know, but to force them, beg and plead with them to go into rehab, that's not the way to do it. And the only reason why I had went into rehab was because I was trying to beat the charge that I got to keep from going to jail for 20 years, because I was facing 20 years at that particular time. And so due to the circumstance of my case, I was suggested to go into rehab. But it did help my case, you know, as far as like when I got out, but just the point of the matter, I got back on the drugs before I went to my trial. But like I said, all that's in the past, that's behind me, and, you know, I went through all that to be the person that I am now, you know. So it wasn't like it's something that I regret or anything like that, because if it hadn't happened, I don't know where I would be right now in my life. You know, because I know the getting to the point from point A to point B, the road is going to be rocky. There are going to be detours. There's going to be stop signs and stop lights and accidents and all these kind of things before I get to my destination. And I'm still on that road, you know. But I've gotten over a lot of hurdles. So I can say, you know, to anybody out there who suffers from any type of an addiction, you know, ask yourself, what do you want for yourself? Ask yourself, do you love yourself? You know, ask yourself, you know, just why am I doing this? And then give it to God. You know, just give it to Him. Give Him all your worries, all your problems. And if it's in your heart, He'll let you know which way to go. because he sure put me back on the right path. And I was out there, believe me. I was out there. And I can say that some of the things that was going on in some drug addicts' lives I didn't have to do. You know, like someone was out there prostituting, selling their bodies for drugs. You know, I never had to do that. You know, but I'm not saying that I was better than anybody because I still was a crackhead. You know, but it's just some things that some crackheads do that other crackheads don't do. But it does not negate the fact that we're still all crackheads. So, Rhea, you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Not really, no. It seemed like the one that's on the rise now is the, I guess they used to call, I don't know what they call, Zoloft and Xanax and those, whatever those are. Girl, I'm sitting here talking about something. I'm sitting here talking about tranquilizers in my head, and I know that's wrong. But I mean, I know some of those things are needed for some people, you know, body chemistry and things. But I just think a lot of that stuff is dispensed too easily nowadays.
Yeah,
and if
yes,
you don't use it or have not used it, try not to. Try to see if you can do other routines or whatever besides, because I just think that they're given out too freely nowadays.
Yes, they are. And just like I said, some people can walk into a doctor's office and don't even be examined, and, you know, he'll write up a prescription, you know.
Exactly.
So I think those doctors are the ones who need to be watched and monitored, and those are the doctors that need to lose their license and never be able to practice again. Because like I said, some of them they may lose their license, and say if a doctor's practicing here in D.C., he may lose his license to practice in D.C. and can go somewhere else and practice, which I really don't think is really good, because what has he learned? You know, they need to get into his pockets, put him out of business, and, you know, give him something to think about. And then as far as, like, them being held accountable for someone overdosing on the drugs and stuff like that, if he directly is given that one person, say, like, the doctor for Michael Jackson, yes, he should be held accountable because he was the one who administered the fatal dose to Michael Jackson. And they're trying to turn it all around, talking about he did it to himself, this and that, and he...
At the end of the day, Michael Jackson couldn't have got his hands on Percocet if he hadn't given it to him. Propofol, if he hadn't given it to him. So
that's true.
That falls under him. Well, you can try to fix it any way you want to, but if you if you hadn't gotten that propofol, he would have never gotten his hands on it.
That's
and
true.
So it automatically falls back on him.
Yeah, and just like Anna Nicole's doctors, you know, just if they're directly involved in
massive amount.
Huh?
Like, oh my, she has such a massive amount, though. It's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But see, you can't blame them and say, like, if I went to the doctor's office and bought all these pills and gave them to this person and that person, you cannot fault the doctor for that. That was on me. But like I said, if he had a patient and he was constantly giving this patient all these drugs to take, then yes, they should be held responsible for that. The same as a drug dealer. If I'm getting my drugs from this same dealer and eventually I OD, then I think he should be held accountable for it.
Exactly.
You know, but then the user has some accountability to face up as well because, you know, just like I said, we was chasing dope if we heard it was good or whatever. But, you know, a person who's on drugs, their mind is not functioning the same way as a person who is not on drugs. A person's mind who is on drugs is thinking only about drugs. They're not thinking about the consequences. They're not thinking about dying. They're not thinking about getting locked up. They're not thinking about the police. The only thing they're thinking about is those drugs. And that's a fact. And why? I know. I used to be there. So, with that being said, we have 4 minutes. You got any closing remarks, Ms. Rhea?
No, it was a good show. It's good to talk about it. Definitely learn off of other people's experiences.
Yeah, but, you know, you got some people that never do, because we don't know how Bobby Christine is going to turn out at this particular time.
That's
and
true.
Like I said, I'm trying to, it leaves a question in my mind, was her and Whitney getting high together? You know, she's drinking with her. She's 18, and she know the drinking age is 21. You know, so
exactly.
And they were very, very close, you know. So who's to say that her and her mom wasn't getting high together? You know, so... But, you know, hopefully everything will work out for the girl. Hopefully everything will work out for Bobby Brown. And, you know, if there's a rift between her and her dad, hopefully they'll get back together and in tune with each other, because we only have one set of parents. We may have a lot of brothers and sisters, a lot of aunts and uncles, cousins, relatives, and all that. We only have one set of parents. And regardless to whatever, you know, may go on between us and our parents, we also have to realize that when they're gone, that's it. And I would give anything to have my mother and father back here today. You know, and like we went through our little ups and downs too, you know, as I'm sure anybody would, because that's just how life is. You don't go through life, you don't sail through life on the good ship lollipop. It's not like that. But, you know, we all have our little crosses to bear, and I bared mine, and at times I'm still bearing it. But one thing for certain, two things are for sure, I've learned a lot over the years. I've learned from my mistakes, I've learned from people, and I've also learned from God. So with that being said, our next week's show, we're having a special guest on next week, Rhea. His name is Lamont Carey. I'm sure you've heard of him throughout the internet. And he's a first-time author, even though he's a first-time author of a novel that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is The Hill, and we will be discussing that next Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Delicious Talk, me and my co-host Rhea. And that'll be Friday the 2nd of March. This month is almost gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was a short month, but, you know, it went by so fast because nothing devastating happened. And, you know, I was looking for a snowstorm or something, but we still got March to go now, so I'm not even going to say anything until that's over with. But I want to thank my guests, now, Black Man 37, Tammy Jones, Miss Kane, a couple of guests that was in the chat room. Rich's sister was there. So everybody have a pleasant evening. And Rhea, thanks.
Thank you.
Co-host. And we'll see you guys next week.
Okay, and you have a lovely week.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Above us all.
Good night, everybody.